Jeremiah 25, verses 30 to 32. Even though Isaiah has 66 chapters and Jeremiah has 52 chapters, if you count the words, Jeremiah is much longer. It's the longest of the prophets. Not that I have counted the words, but they have computer programs that can do this. Now, Jeremiah 25 occurs in the context of this cup of wrath that is being passed around to all nations, for all nations to drink. And the cup of wrath is a metaphor. That equates or makes a connection between the experience of God's punishing wrath and the idea of getting drunk on wine. So very often this is what the metaphor is. It's comparing this to that. Anyway, that's what we have earlier in the chapter. And verse 29 says, God says, "For behold, against the city which my name has been called upon her, I am beginning to do evil. And are you nations exempt? No, you are not exempt, for I am summoning the sword against all the inhabitants of the earth." So it's a context of how God's wrath begins, God's judgment begins with Jerusalem. And for Jeremiah, of course, that would be 586 BC, the destruction of Jerusalem by the Babylonians. But then the point is, it doesn't just stop with Jerusalem, but then it goes, if Jerusalem has to suffer, which is God's holy city, what about the pagans, the heathen out there, who are not part of God's chosen people? And then the idea is they as well are not exempt. They're also under the wrath of God. So the whole point of the chapter is everybody is under the wrath of God. No exceptions. In that sense, it is very similar to 1 Peter 4. If judgment begins with the household of God, then, if we will barely be saved, then what about the rest? It also serves the hearers of Jeremiah's book. Don't emulate the nations or don't think that they have it better. They're not exempt from judgment either. Now verse 30 then begins, and he kind of looks at the same thing, talks about the same universal judgment, but with some different pictures. Verse 30, "Va'atah, and you, Tinave, you will prophesy Alehem to them." Now God is speaking to Jeremiah. You will prophesy. Nava is the verb, and it's a niphal, but in the niphal it does not mean to be prophesied, but it means to prophesy. So you always have to ask in Hebrew, what does the PAL do to the meaning of this word? Or what does the niphal do to the meaning of this word? You can't assume that they're all always passive in meaning. So you will, nava, of course you're familiar with the noun navi, prophet. This is the verb root. You will prophesy alehem to them. That's the preposition el plus the suffix. Eighth is the direct object marker. So now comes the direct object. You will prophesy to them kol hadavarim ha'ela. All the words, these ones. So in Hebrew, they put the demonstrative pronoun after the noun. The words, these. In English, of course, we put the demonstrative before the noun. So we say, these words. So it's just a difference of word order. You will prophesy to them all these words. Who's the them? It's all the nations, all the inhabitants of the earth that he said at the end of verse 29. Va'amarta, and you will say, I'll lay him to them. Now, so Jeremiah is speaking to all the nations of the earth. Now, how are you supposed to imagine this? Did he actually travel from nation to nation and kind of convey the message? I doubt it. But remember, in chapter 1, he was called to be a prophet to the nations, not just a prophet to Israel. So Jeremiah is, you know, God's mouthpiece for the whole, to the whole world. This universal perspective here, that's important. Well, how would you preach to all the nations? One possibility is, standing at the temple in Jerusalem, he would just kind of rhetorically say, all you nations, give ear. So that, in principle anyway, they're being addressed, even though none of them might actually be there. Another principle might be, or another scenario, might be in Jeremiah 27. And that is where the other nations send their ambassadors to Jerusalem. So you got to picture ancient Jerusalem as a cosmopolitan city, like a UN. And when these other nations send their envoys to Jerusalem to talk to the king, the prophet actually, in Jeremiah 27, the prophet actually got to address all of these ambassadors. And he told them, go back and tell your king so-and-so. So it could be that way. You can address all the nations by addressing their envoys. Anyway, now Jeremiah is speaking to the nations, and what does he say? Yahweh, Mimaron, from the place, Yishag, roars. This is from Sha'ag, it's what a lion does. An imperfect, Yahweh will roar, Yahweh is roaring. Mimarom, from a place. That's referring to Yahweh's place, from his place. Marom, though, is very often a high place. So from his high place, apparently referring to heaven. U Mimmaon Kodsho, and from the place of his holiness. This is a common type of construction where you put his holiness as a genitive, but it should be understood as an adjectival genitive, so we translate his holy place. From his holy place, Yitain, this is the imperfect of Nathan, he will give forth, he will give, kolo, his voice. This is a standard Hebrew idiom. To give forth your voice means to speak out your voice, with your voice. To project your voice, maybe, is how we would say it in English. So Yahweh roars like a lion from his place, from his den, you might say. From his holy den, from his holy dwelling place, he gives out his voice. Sha'og. This is a call infinitive absolute. Notice the vowel sequence. Katol. That A-O sequence. That's how you do an infinitive absolute. It comes before the finite verb. What does an infinitive absolute do? It intensifies the finite verb. Indeed, definitely, certainly. Yishag. He roars. Al, over, Navehu, his pasture. The who on the end is a suffix. So God is like a lion and he's roaring over the sheep. But notice, they're his sheep. And yet, so there's kind of an interesting idea there. It's not that the lion is attacking someone else's sheep. The lion's attacking his own sheep. Well, the sheep are in trouble. This picture of Yahweh as a lion is fairly common in the prophets. Hadad, I think his own sheep here would refer to, first of all, to Israel, but then he expands it in the following. Hadad Kedorakim Ya'aneh, and he will answer with a loud cry like those who trample. Well, like Darak means to trample, to tread. Derek is the word for road. That doesn't make sense. He will respond. Who's the he? Could be Yahweh. I suppose it could be his sheep. But I think it's Yahweh. Yahweh will respond. So Yahweh roars and then Yahweh responds a second time with a loud cry, "Hey, Dad." Sometimes that means a war cry, but here I think it's just a regular shout out loud. Like Dorakim. Apparently that's people who trample on grapes is the idea. It doesn't say grapes, but that seems to be the simile. Do people who walk on grapes cry out loud voices? I don't know. Anybody know? Do they go, "Ah!" I don't know. Okay, they sing. Okay. All right, so maybe that's the idea. The picture he's changed the picture. Now it's like those who trample on grapes. That also kind of sounds ominous, that Yahweh is about to trample on some grapes. Yahweh responds with a cry, a shout, like those who trample on grapes. El tu kol yoshevei ha'aretz, to all the inhabitants of the earth. So this is the addressee again, all the inhabitants of the earth, not just Israel. Verse 31, ba sha'on. Noise is coming, commotion is coming, sha'on. Crying out is coming, ad katzei ha'aretz, to the end of the earth. So why is the whole earth going to be mourning and wailing and in such commotion? Key, because, Riv la Yahweh bagoyim, because there is a contest to Yahweh among the nations. This is how you do a possession, one of the ways. That's simply a possessive lamed. The nations, or Yahweh, has a controversy, a reev, among all the nations. Yahweh has a courtroom picture. He has a courtroom case against all the nations. And so we've changed the picture from a lion idea to God as judge in a courtroom, and all the nations are the defendants. Nishpat hu. This is a nifal of Shaphat. He has been judged. Now that's not what it means. What does a nifal of Shaphat mean? It means more to make yourself judge, to take the position of judge. He has taken the position of judge with respect to all flesh, basar. So again, that universal idea, he's going to judge all flesh. Ha-Rusha'im, the wicked, Nethanam, have given them, he has given them to the sword. So how do you put the pieces together? Ha-Rusha'im is like the direct object that is set out in front. It's called a casus pendens. It's kind of hanging out there. As for the wicked, now comes your main sentence. Nithanam, that am on the end is a suffix. He has given them, la cherev, to the sword. So God has given the wicked to the sword. He gives them over to the sword. He assigns them to the sword. That's the idea. They are to be slaughtered. So God acts as judge, and then the wicked among the nations get assigned to the sword. Na'um Yahweh, the utterance of Yahweh. Now, when did this historically happen? Well, let's read on, verse 32. Thus spoke Yahweh of hosts, behold, evil or misfortune is going out from nation to nation, Vasa'ar Gadol, and a great tempest will be stirred up, Miyarkathay Aretz, from the ends or from the thighs, the end points of the earth. Now, what is this misfortune, this great tempest that's going out over all the nations? For Jeremiah, in his age, it's Babylon. And that's how God is going to judge all the nations, by bringing Babylon on them. And of course, as you remember your history, Babylon did conquer the whole known world. So Babylon was God's instrument of punishment and judgment. But that universal judgment of the 6th century BC, I would argue, is simply a preliminary version of a bigger judgment to come, a universal judgment. So that there is this judgment for all peoples, and this is a warning. It's a warning. There's judgment day is coming. Take heed. We need to hear that too, this eschatological judgment day that we all must face. It should make us start asking questions like, am I ready for this judgment? How do I stand before God? What does God require? You know, start thinking vertically instead of just about my life and my relationships with my neighbors. Start thinking about how do I stand before God. So we need to hear these universal judgment type pericopes. And it's a very frightening day. God is like a roaring lion, an angry lion, and he devours his sheep. He puts all the wicked to the sword. So it's very frightening. It's a warning. It should rouse us up from our indifference and our lethargy. What's the gospel? The gospel is that this eschatological judgment has broken into history ahead of time on Good Friday. That was Judgment Day. That's when the whole world was judged and condemned as concentrated in Jesus Christ. And therefore, because we have already been judged, because God condemned Christ in our place, therefore we need not fear this future day. Rather, we've been declared righteous, and we can look forward to the future day and have hope. So that would be the gospel. Here, though, the primary emphasis of Jeremiah is the law. Judgment for all nations. No one is exempt. Okay, thank you very much.